When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.
Hello and welcome back to Chronicles, where today we're going to be discussing the Eumenides by Aeschylus, not Aeschylus, as I was saying it previously. And joining me for wrapping up this grand trilogy of Agamemnon, the Libation Bearers, and now the Eumenides is Brother Stelios.
Thank you, Brother Luca, and thank you, everyone. We're going to have a great discussion today. Thank you for inviting me back.
Yes.
And I will say that this is... hands down, my favorite part of the trilogy.
Same.
And it's probably my favorite play by Aeschylus. Maybe this and Prometheus Bound.
Mm.
I oscillate between the two of them. But this is really good.
This is
where we sort of see the climax of the Orestia. Because you can say that relative to the Eumenides, the previous two plays aren't that impressive.
Yeah, I can certainly understand that. And one of the things that I found was when we were discussing the Libation Bearers, although it is a very good middle, it's a very good second act, it does retread a lot of the themes and a lot of the moral conflicts that Agamemnon, the first play, was going through. Whereas this one, you see the actual where Aeschylus is driving the entire narrative.
Yes.
The payoff. You're getting all of the payoff as to what it was all for, what all the suffering meant in the end.
Yes.
And what's more as well, it's a fantastic play because it's finally, in the third act, we bring in some of the actual gods as characters.
Yeah.
And, you know, they get speeches and they get... Well, they're the most important characters within the entire play. And so it's wonderful to see Athena and Apollo laying down the law.
Yeah,
and in
their element.
Yeah, absolutely. So it's great fun. Before we start talking about the third play, should we just begin by talking about recapping what briefly happened in parts one and parts two?
Sounds like a great idea.
Okay, so in part one, which I'm sure you've watched by now, Agamemnon returns home from the Trojan War, 10 years at war, and is confronted by his wife, Clytemnestra. And she basically, the entire play is just him arriving home and her murdering him in his own house, in Argos, in his own bath, for sacrificing their daughter, Iphigenia, for favourable winds to carry his fleet over to Troy and begin the war.
And this was divine command. I think it was Artemis who commanded him to do
yes.
so. So it isn't just that he woke up one day and said, right, let me slaughter my daughter
no.
in order to have favorable winds. He was ordered by the goddess Artemis to do so.
Mm-hmm.
And you just don't disobey the gods in the Greek mythology setting. Mm.
And what's more as well, of course, so our second play, The Libation Bearers, begins exactly with that. The son of Agamemnon, Orestes, returning home after long exile. And he too has been given a command by the gods, because he has been told by the Oracle of Delphi, that, you know, this conduit through which the will of Apollo speaks, that he has to avenge his father. Right. And it's very important that that is the phrasing of it. You must avenge your father. It doesn't expressly say go and kill your mother. But of course, in order to avenge your father, that is implicitly what you have to do.
Here is where you see a theme that is really important in philosophy.
Mm.
You have the very general statement or injunction, in this case, avenge your father.
Mm.
And you have the application of it, because it varies across settings.
Mm.
You could avenge your father by killing a stranger who killed your father, or you could do so in terms of killing your mother, like Orestes did.
Mm.
So what is really interesting is to see that we have a sort of massive conflict between the injunction, the moral commandment by the gods to human beings, and its application into the particular concrete circumstances each person finds himself in.
Mm.
And this is what generates one of the main tensions, the moral dilemma of the play. It's just, on the one hand, he has to avenge his father. On the other hand, it's his mother we're talking about.
Mm.
And this is what is the sort of foundation for the massive moral rivalry between two distinct worldviews that Aeschylus is going to talk about throughout the entire play.
Right. And even though after the death of Agamemnon and the rise of Clytemnestra and Aegisthus, Argos comes into this kind of arbitrary tyranny, particularly from Aegisthus, who is just not a philosophical man and just believes in raw power and domination, right? There's no actual nurturing kingship within him. He's a man without really any qualities. And even though Argos falls into this tyranny, though it is just and right, of course, that Orestes, as the son of the true king, returns to Argos and reasserts the proper order, the play really drives at the fact that first and foremost, before anything to do with the wider polity of Argos, really this is a matter of an honour killing, right? It really is just about blood and revenge, and the fact that in this old world, where the old, ancient, primal laws of the earth govern humanity, justice and revenge are one in the same. And what we see here in this third play is the divergence of those things into something where justice becomes something actually imbued with wisdom as well.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah. All right, then. So let's begin talking about the third play. So can you, for someone who is obviously not a native Greek speaker, just perhaps explain what the Eumenides means at the title of the play?
Right, so Eumenides means essentially good spirits or something of the sort.
Mm.
We are talking about the Furies, who are the spirits of vengeance, who are named at the end of the play Eumenides.
Mm.
So what is really interesting here is that we have a sort of trajectory that will take us from viewing the spirits of vengeance as, you know, spirits of vengeance, to viewing them as good spirits, without that meaning that justice at the end is going to be equated with vengeance.
Mm.
So essentially, we are talking about the Furies, or the Erinyes, as they were called in Greek. Most probably the audience knows them by the name Furies.
Right.
And they were essentially the spirits of vengeance that were haunting people who committed particular crime that had to be avenged.
Yeah. I believe the term that's often ascribed to them is something along the lines of like chthonic, right? They're creatures of an underworld. They're from the darkness.
Yes, and chthonic means spirits of the earth.
Mm.
And when we're talking about spirits of the earth in this context, we're not necessarily speaking of spirits of Gaia, who is considered to be, relatively speaking, a good goddess. It's the grandmother of Zeus and the Olympians.
Sure.
It's more like spirits that are titanic. Mm. So the Furies in Greek mythology were born when Cronos was chopped his father's balls off.
Uranus.
Yes.
Yes.
Sorry.
Yeah, no, it's funny every time. We all know it.
Right. So let me be very, very brief about it. The first order of the gods was governed by the first deities, who were Uranus and Gaia.
Mm.
These were the two supreme deities. There were more, but these were the entities that governed the universe. There were more, like, Night, Nyx. You know, you have all sorts of, I think, Oceanus.
Right.
Pontus. You have all sorts of interesting deities. People who want to find out more about the names, they should read Hesiod's Theogony, who did try to bring them together somehow and systematize them.
Mm.
Or I think by Apollodorus, the ancient Greek mythology, who was a mythographer. Right, so what happened was that at some point they gave birth, Uranus and Gaia gave birth to the Hecatonchirus, means 100-handed beasts.
Mm.
And they had 50 heads and 100 hands, and they were complete chads. And Uranus was a bit emasculated by them and was afraid of them and tried to banish them in Earth, within the Earth. And Gaia didn't take that well. She thought that Uranus was the first who committed shameful acts and devised a plot with the Titans. And she took an adamant sickle and told the Titans, who were their children, you need to avenge your brothers because your father's the first one who committed shameful acts, and take this adamant sickle. No one was up to the task except for Cronos. So he took it, he did the job, and as he threw the... The thing.
Yes, the testicles, yes.
The testicles at the sea. There were two things that happened. The blood of the testicles gave birth to the Furies.
Mm. Yeah. It's one of the most arbitrary backstories I've ever heard for any character origin story.
Yes, and then when the other part was fell down near the island of Kythira, and it the winds and the waves took it to Cyprus.
Mm.
And there was foam close to it, forming around it.
Mm.
And essentially, it gave birth to the goddess of love, that was Aphrodite.
Right.
And there is also this interplay that love and hatred and revenge are frequently linked together.
Mm.
Right. So then we had Cronus, who was just another tyrannical figure in the gods. He was just representing brute force.
He overthrew his father because he could, not because he had some actual better order to replace his father's
word. And then he was, you could say, tyrannical to his sons, the Olympians, and Zeus teamed up with Rhea and Gaia, and basically they had the Titanomachy and completely overturned the Titans. They banished Cronus into Tartarus, as well as the Titans, I think, there. And then Zeus swallowed Metis, who was the goddess of wisdom, was also one of his many wives. And then two things happened. His order then was, just because he combined force, supreme force, with wisdom, and he gave birth to Athena, and Athena is going to talk about it,
yes,
because towards the very end of the Eumenides. So Athena is essentially one of the one of the goddesses that oversee that order with Zeus. Mm-hmm. She has an easy way to convince him with things.
Yes. She's very persuasive.
She can be very persuasive. And when it comes to the Furies essentially are spirits of vengeance. Mm-hmm. And they're chthonic in the sense that they are not Olympian. Mm. They are representing the old Titanic way. So when they're called chthonic, spirits of the earth, it doesn't mean spirits that relate to the grandmother of Zeus,
yes,
who he loved and she loved him. Mm. We're talking about the Titans. It's the old order that was won by Zeus and the Olympians. But because this is the message of mythology, I think it's cross-cultural when we're talking about mythology. There is such a thing as a just and providential order in the world that can be momentarily disrupted by the forces of chaos that can win the day, but eventually they're going to lose the war. They may win battles, but essentially the heroes and the gods are going to readdress the imbalance from them. So when we're talking about the spirits of vengeance that as chthonic, we're talking about spirits of vengeance that are representing the old Titanic way.
Right. And what's more as well, they have a particular vendetta against Orestes, because he killed his own mother. They represent kind of feminine chaos, right? The chaotic feminine of nature.
Yeah.
You know, all those things, vengeance, fertility. And what you have is when Orestes obviously murders Clytemnestra at the end of the second play, he immediately flees for the sanctuary of Delphi and the temple of Apollo.
Which is about 200 miles from Argos.
Right, okay. Yeah. He really ran.
Yeah.
Orestes is going to run a lot in this play, let's put it that way.
Yeah.
He puts marathon runners to shame. And so Orestes is fleeing to the Temple of Apollo. And the play begins with the priestess basically actually talking exactly about this order, about continuity. First, there's a prayer for Gaia, and then for... is it Thetis? I can't remember.
Yes, Themis.
Themis, that was it.
Who was the goddess of justice.
Yes, and then to Phoebe, and then to Apollo. And so you see this continuity of the people, the gods, who have basically been empowered and had this temple in their trust down the ages, of course. And then you get this remarkable moment where, because obviously the oracle is there to speak on behalf of Apollo, and so it's just getting ready for the daily goings on, and then goes immediately inside the temple in that classic ancient Greek tragedy, goes in, i.e. off stage, and then immediately runs back out onto the stage to tell the audience the horrors that she has seen in there. And I wanted to start with this part because it's we get a very, very vivid depiction of the Furies themselves. Also, on top of the shrine in the middle is Orestes himself. So the entire scene that this priestess sees is Orestes sat dripping with blood on top of this shrine, and asleep at the side of the shrine are the Furies, who have been pursuing him ever since he murdered Clytemnestra. And so our priestess says, "But worse, I cannot describe it. Around him, on the stone benches, strange sleeping creatures. I would call them women, but they are not women. Gorgon-faced, yet not gorgons. Black, like the rags of soot that hang in a chimney. Like bats, yet wingless. Each of their faces a mess of weeping ulcers. The eyes, the mouth, ulcers. Their bodies exhale a stench like maggoty corpses. Their cloaks are saturated and stained with their own putrescence that oozes from them into the stones. Who are they? What are they? Some other kind, inhuman, monsters from a different world, to be cursed by God and men. Apollo is powerful, and this is his temple. All human pollutions await his cleansing touch. Priest, prophet, healer, I leave the stranger to him." And so enter Apollo. after that. But so it's a really monstrous depiction of
the
Furies.
They don't seem particularly nice or likable.
No.
Yeah.
No, they are. And what's more as well, the fact that they are already the fact that Orestes is sat on the shrine and they are just waiting for him to step off of it.
Yeah.
Right, so they can get him. That's really what's going on here. As long as Orestes stays on this sacred spot that has Apollo's protection, they can't touch him, but he can't stay there forever.
Yeah.
And so they're just waiting for this moment.
One thing I want to say about this for people who are going to read this is that you hear the priestess referring to Apollo as Loxias. And there were many names that were given to the gods that were essentially functioning as epithets, as adjectives. They were trying to refer to the gods in their capacity as something. And they had many capacities. And Loxias essentially refers to the ambiguous nature of Apollo. And what he mentioned here has nothing to do with gender. It means that the he frequently communicated his... the oracles communicated the commandments of Apollo or the prophecies in highly ambiguous language. You could almost say it was in language where they couldn't be
right.
They couldn't be disconfirmed.
Yes,
somehow.
Yeah, yes. Plausible deniability.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah. It is what Apollo has.
Yes.
Yes. All right.
So Apollo comes out with his bow and arrow, doesn't he?
Well, he immediately comes in to basically bolster Orestes because Orestes is under his protection. And one thing that I find interesting, and the play doesn't really give any dialogue to address this fact, and I understand that Aeschylus is telling his own version of an origin story, really, for civic law in Athens. However, I do find it interesting that of all of the gods to champion Orestes, it's Apollo that does it, given that Apollo was, of course, on the opposite side to Orestes' father, Agamemnon.
It's Apollo's redemption arc.
In the Trojan War. Yeah. And now you see him just going gun for leather to protect his son out of this sense of justice for him. And so, like I said, the play doesn't really address that, though it does later address the fact that Athena fought on the same side as Agamemnon at Troy. So that obviously... I know Athena's obviously your favourite, given that she is the protector of your city still to this day. So you get this moment where Apollo says to Orestes, flee, whilst they're still asleep, and basically just run as fast as you can to Athens, to the temple, to the statue of Athena, and pray for her assistance.
Yeah.
Because the thing is as well that whilst he's been in this temple, Apollo has tried to cleanse Orestes of the actual sin itself. He's tried, but it's interesting to note that even he as a god, as an Olympian, cannot entirely cleanse Orestes of what he has done. Right? He is still... that the blood works as almost like a homing beacon.
Because he has done something.
Yes, he has.
That is, you know, it's not the easiest thing to explain or to justify.
Well, no, absolutely not, of course. No, what he did was a terrible thing.
Yeah.
And the point that the libation bearers makes so well, of course, is that Orestes is given an impossible choice.
Yeah.
Right. He's given an impossible choice where there is no good outcome.
Exactly.
But he must choose.
Exactly. And that is why Apollo tells him, when you go to Athena in Athens, tell her that I made you do it. I told you to do it.
Yeah. It's like getting a written note from your doctor.
Yeah.
Just to say, no, it's fine. I authorize this.
Yeah.
And so Orestes pelts it as fast as he possibly can. And then we get to my favorite part of the entire play, which is ridiculous given that it's got gods. But I just love the fact that you get this one brief little cameo in the play from Clytemnestra's ghost. The fact that she, we're making her, I believe, the only character to be in all three plays of this trilogy.
If you enjoyed this piece of premium content from the Lotus Eaters, head to our website where you can find more.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 21 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, Allbirds or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling, and for the shoppers buying, simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet. And the not-so-secret secret, with Shop Pay, that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going... So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell wherever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Businesses that sell more sell on Shopify. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout Skims uses. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/audioboom, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/audioboom to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/audioboom.
Coda has turned up the frequency. Buses are running more often across Central Ohio. Starting this September, you'll see expanded weekend service on the east and north sides, including the Easton and Polaris corridors. Plus, there are added weekday trips downtown from New Albany, Canal, Winchester, and Tuttle. It's more service, more connections, and more ways to move across the city. Discover the enhanced schedule at coda.com/service changes. That's coda.com/service changes.